Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Top of hour two on this Tuesday. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Good.
Glad to hear it.
Andy, we'll talk about the weekend, the Empire Showcase card, and then in the Athena, too, on Sunday, and more. But first, on everybody's mind, particularly in New York, the passing of Rick Violette. And I know you had Rick on at the Post this summer, and he was just a guy that was so easy to like and respect.
Yeah, Rick was great. Rick was really great. You know, he was good in all the right ways, which is something you can't say for most people or a lot of people. But yeah, no, Rick was, listen, I mean, I don't think there's anything I can say that hasn't already been said probably more than a few times by other people. I mean, he's he dedicated his life to trying to do the right thing for everybody at the racetrack, everybody and anybody, and something we can't, something you wish you could say about yourself, but it's hard to say about too many people, to be honest. And Rick fought for what he believed in, and tirelessly. And unfortunately, he probably never got the credit for it until after he died, which is maybe the way it goes in life, you know. But I don't think in any way it mattered to him, because he didn't do it for that reason. He did it for the right reasons. And I enjoyed Rick's company a great deal. Funny, Rick and I met arguing about something at the racetrack many years ago, and one of the main things I liked about Rick, he's somebody that was always ready for an argument about something, but it was never personal. It was always about the topic, and we were friends for years. But yeah, no, I agree. And he was a fine trainer as well. It's not, you know, I think sometimes that gets lost. He was pretty good at his profession as well, and you know, and somebody who cared about his owners a great deal, you know, had owners, longtime owners like Ralph Evans and Seth Klarman, who have nothing but, you know, great things to say about him personally, and said a lot about him. And it's a shame that he's gone, and it's a shame that he didn't get a chance to enjoy himself a little bit. You know, he worked so hard for NYFA for so many years and finally stepped aside and have a chance to enjoy other things in life a little bit more. Unfortunately, he didn't, and that's a real shame for him, but it's a loss for everybody. It's a loss for racing. Right? It's a loss for all of us.
I'm glad you referenced, you know, the not personal part about having any confrontation with him, because I cited you yesterday with Alan Foreman, and I have on other occasions too. I thought that you've had the, you know, one of the best quotes about one of his attributes is that you could go toe to toe, and he didn't hold any animosity or grudge, or it was strictly about the issue at hand. It wasn't a personal judgment ever, and that's a unique quality that boy, the internet could use some of that.
Yeah, well, I think that's the reason that Rick was able to accomplish as much as he was, that he stuck to the fight. He didn't, you know, it didn't make it personal. He didn't make it about other issues. He stuck to whatever the fight was. And if you were arguing and trying, he was trying to change something or make something better, always make something better. It didn't devolve into some argument that it wasn't. You know, he kept his eye on the prize. And that's a quality that made him as successful as he was for so many years. Just doing so much good for a lot of people at the racetrack, many, many people. And, he was a terrific guy. You know, he really was. It was somebody that you enjoyed seeing and look forward to seeing and running into. And it's just a shame he went so fast, too, you know. So many friends never got a chance to say goodbye. And it's hard. You know, it's hard. I mean, it's to have thought he had beaten it and just... Listen, it's an unfortunate fact of life as we all get older. You know, this is going to happen. It happens more often. But he was 65. He was relatively young. He had plenty left. It's a shame. It's a real loss. And a genuine loss. You know, this is not a situation of somebody going where people are saying nice things because they're gone. It's a real loss. He touched a lot of people. A lot of people didn't even know what he touched, you know?
Well, that's
what makes it so special, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the people,
exactly.
It's the things that people do when nobody's looking. They're the ones that really make a difference. And that was Rick.
I've had already. You know, yesterday we had three conversations with Alan Foreman and Rich Migliori and Dave Grenig. Today, I knew would. Appropriately honor him later. Charlie Hayward, I reached out to
Charlie. Charlie wrote a really nice piece yesterday.
Yes, he did.
About it. And just, it's the right point, you know, and I think that's something that's very true. That he's somebody that he was always ready, you know, fighting the fight, so he's often on the other side of racetrack management. But it's important for the racetrack management to see the other side. It's important for all of us. Whoever we are, to see as many sides of all issues as possible.
I want you to also acknowledge, because nobody does this like you do, but the different kinds of horses that he was able to have success with. I mean, in recent years, we've always thought of him and he's been quoted or at least noted with his. With his young horses, but he won with all different kinds.
Wicklow, I mean, you know,
absolutely
long distance turf races. Like all good trainers, he won with the horses that he had. You know, it wasn't, you know, this notion that somebody's a turf trainer or somebody's a dirt trainer and such. You know, I guess there's some extreme examples, but in general, a good trainer is a good trainer. Rick was a good trainer. Right? I mean, he had man with Wicklow and. And a lot of good horses over the years, so it's, you know, he's been a staple winning races in New York for as long as I can remember, going back to the 80s. So, you don't last that long in this game unless you're doing something right.
The race, and one of my friends online sent a link, finally, I looked yesterday to find that Fountain of Youth. From 2004. Oh my God!
Yeah.
That's as great a race as you'll ever see. It might not have been good for the horse long term, but
well, 2nd of June, really season.
Yep.
Horse. Yeah. I mean, they bought that. Seth bought that horse for a lot of money, right? $320,000, which, you know, back then that was a lot. Right? 92, I think it was a 2-year-old sale. That was really a lot back then. New York bred. Good horse.
Won the Nashua, won the Remsen.
Yeah.
Won the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah. We made a move in the Derby, too. Briefly. That was a funny Derby, though. Nobody really made much of a move in there. It rained so close to the race. Not saying the best horse didn't win, but a funny Derby.
There was a couple of horses of his, too, Andy, that I had kind of forgotten about. Citadeed. Being one of them, and Dave Grenig brought up from really just a few years ago that I had forgotten about that got hurt. That Spurious Precision.
Well, he died. I mean, he broke his maiden. And he got a 102 buyer either in his maiden. I think he won the Cerro Specials next start. And then he had a training incident or something. We got the champagne. Yeah, sure. He's a very fast horse. Yeah, Spurious Precision, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
no.
you, it's just amazing because the more we talked yesterday with Dave, Dave kept pulling up names and horses that I'd forgotten about, including Effie Trinket. And then I thought of Gitche Gumi. I mean, he did a lot of...
Those were good turf horses, New York Reds.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gitche Gumi was a very nice horse. And Patsy Simons owned that horse. You still see her in pedigrees. In fact, she's a dam of some good horses, right? I think.
Yes.
I feel like it.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
I mean, listen, when you're around that long, you win a lot of races. And Rick won a lot of races. I don't know that Diversify was his best horse, but he might have been. Did a great job with that horse, right? Great job with him.
No doubt.
Yeah, I remember seeing him in his early parts of his career, right? I mean, in the winter.
You know what's interesting about Violet's career when you look at his stake winners, just using that as the snapshot. It really displays how a partnership with a horseman and the interests of the owner, what their goals are around the game. Because when for instance, relatively late in the game, he comes up with Samrat and Upstart and goes to the Derby. And it sort of tells you, whatever, if you've got homebred program with an owner or whether you've got somebody like a Seth Klarman who, was a buying in the sales and operating that way, the direction is really not dependent fully, but really that sets the course and the horseman has to adjust accordingly.
Well,
and Rick could do it.
Yeah, and Dream Rush, too, the last point.
That's absolutely.
Won the test. Won the test in Prioress. Test in Acorn. Picture at least a dual grade one winner.
Yeah, test in Prioress, absolutely. Yeah. Back to back. Earlier.
She's a brood mare. She's got a good horse, right?
She's got...
She's got a good horse.
Yes.
Some of the horse costs a lot of money. You say this and you get embarrassed when you see how good the horse was.
Yeah, you can listen. You can't remember every single broodmare. It's hard. I'm glad you went right. Man from Wicklow was his first Grade One winner in 2003.
Really?
It was, and that was down in Gulfstream in that old what was then the Breeders' Cup Handicap, and that. Summer.
Dreaming of Julia. She's a dam of Dreaming of Julia. Anyway.
There you go.
That summer, sorry.
Rick was stabled at the harness track. And I got to spend a lot of time right across the shed row. Was helping my friend Malcolm, and he was right across from Rick, and I got to see Man from Wicklow all the time. It was fun to be around. That was one of my favorites of his. And he had another one, Andy, that you might run. Do you remember Free of Love?
Sure, of course. I bet Free of Love 30-1 with Richie in the Jim Dandy. That was the Jim Dandy where Congaree was a huge favorite. He didn't run particularly well. And he had the race won, and he just got nailed at the end by Scorpion. Right? Scorpion?
That sounds right.
Lucas's, yeah.
Yes.
That was the year Jim Dandy was a Grade One, believe it or not.
That crazy, and everybody was goofy. That's right.
Yeah, he was
31-1
that day. I know Richie rode him, yeah. Man, Wayne won with Jerry Bailey rode the horse for Wayne that won. And just nailed him on the money. And Dream Rush, and Free Love looked like he had it wrapped up. I don't think he ever ran that well after that. That's Ralph Evans owned that horse, I believe. I think I'm almost sure that Ralph owned that horse. I feel like I can remember the Light Blue Silks. Listen, Upstart was a very, very good horse. And Upstart was unlucky in that Breeders' Cup. You there?
I am. I'm just looking
Upstart should have been second, and arguably should have won the race. Could have won the race. I'm not saying he would have, but he was right in the teeth, the pace. Sure was a good horse. Very good horse. He got DQ'd, right, in the Fountain of Youth?
Yes, that is right. That was a crazy, that was
right. Terrible.
That was nuts. That was ridiculous. Yeah. And then second in the Florida Derby to Materiality.
Yeah, close second. That was a big fig race. And he was a good horse. I always wondered if he was a better one-turn miler. By the time he sort of ran those races, it was kind of too late.
Well, and he ended up, unfortunately, he was left in the wake of Frosted in the Met that year.
Yeah, well, wasn't like anybody behind Frosted ran a particularly good race, but yes.
And then
they still wouldn't have won.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I it's funny. Now I'm looking at I had forgotten I was at Oaklawn for that year's Arkansas Derby, and he ran in the Oaklawn Handicap, the one that FNX won.
Yeah,
and I'd forgotten that. I'd forgotten
he
was there.
Trip the whole way. I feel like he was like out in the middle of the track the whole way.
That does sound right. I knew you'd have some good reaction to some of the horse names of Rick's. Yeah. Jerry Bailey. Jerry's going to join us tomorrow. As well. So.
Yeah. Well, I think. Yeah, Rick's a real loss. It's a real loss. You know, they're all losses in their own way, but Rick's a real loss. Really crappy. Yeah. And nice stuck around a while longer.
Let's shift gears and talk about the weekend. I thought what felt like a nice series of performances in the Empire Classics. Some thoughts about
Showcase Day. It was a fun day, and fortunately, it seems like it was our last really nice, warm day of the Belmont meeting. It's not looking particularly warm all week. Well, it's supposed to be okay for most of it, but it's always a fun day, and I think that Horse won the Classic, Pat-a-back, turned into a really good horse. I mean, he was always a good horse, but he's really blossomed for Jeremiah. It was nice to see Harold Lerner win two races. Harold's a good guy. And the other horses, the sprinter's gotten very good. I mean, he's very lucky to win that race. I don't wanna knock him. He's gotten really good, and Gary's done a great job. And it was nice to see Gary Odessa win a race in Showcase Day. Such a good, kind of terrific Belmont meet. I mean, Runaway Loot. He's gotten very good. I mean, the second horse probably should have won, but whatever. It was an oddly no paced race, but it's New York where nobody wants to be aggressive ever. We had Kendrick on the show. I don't know if you saw it. We did a Belmont live show, and Kendrick came on for about 40 minutes. It was great seeing him. He's doing well. He'll be back hopefully early in 2019.
Mm.
But we joked around about it. He said he watches the race at home. He said some of these races he says to himself, Andy must be going crazy. Bonita Bianca ran extremely well. I mean, she's really turned her life around this year with Jason Service, who might dub. And Offering Plan ran a gigantic race. He was much more into the race than he normally is. And it's funny, I was watching the race with Chad Brown, and Chad commented with Javier. He said a lot of this sort of success he attributes to Javier. He said to me during the race, he said, you know, he really rides him. He's a tough horse to ride. You really need to be on him. And he said, I just know if he could have done as well with this horse if it hadn't been for Javier. He gave him a lot of credit, actually. He was very.
It was a big day. Big day for Javier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He won his 5,000th race. Yeah, he's funny. He won 4999 with Offering Plan. As I went down the winner's circle, Chad and Javier said, "Oh, I won 5,000 with 55." Two races later, I said, "Poor Runaway Loot. Does he know?" And he started laughing. I think he just completely forgot he was running somebody else the next race. It's really funny. And he won 5,001 with 55. But, it's just always a fun day. New York Red races were tough to decipher, but they often are. I didn't get close to the winner of either race, but one of them paid a pretty good price. The other one was okay. The other one paid a big price, you know. So there are races where there's always some opportunities to be smart and make some money. You know, a smattering of some shorter prices. And even horses like, you know, Benita Bianca and Pat on the Back, I mean, they paid $7.50 and $6.50. It's not like they were super, super short favorites. They're both pretty logical horses. But yeah, so it was fun. And then Rimska was tremendous on Sunday. Jesus, I didn't like her at all. I missed her. Stabile really liked her. He was dead right. Gee, she got a big thing. And I don't think I was wrong about New Money Honey. She ran very well again, but Rimska just buried her. Jesus.
So that was third. That was third off the third off the layoff.
No, it was her second
fourth
start this
second
year. Yeah, I mean, she's clearly a horse that if she ever could have, you know, stayed in the racetrack longer, she probably would have done some really good things. But maybe, who knows, maybe she'll have another chance. I don't know what they're doing in the future. I imagine he's going to probably bring her the Matriarch, but I don't know for sure. I didn't ask.
Well, and that field actually keeps getting some nice names, including, you know, Daddy is a Legend, who had that situation at Keeneland through the rail.
Yeah, that was a shame. George, she had that race won, probably, right?
She was moving like a...
Yeah. Glad May didn't get hurt. She didn't get hurt, so that's good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was rough, yeah. It was weird. It's hard to tell if they tightened things up on the inside or if it was always tight for her. You know, it's tough watching it. If it's ambiguous, you say they didn't, right? What else?
I mentioned about Highway Star. They're going to bypass the trip to Breeders' Cup with her.
A wise move.
Yeah.
She went over 1.3 million earnings. She didn't have the best of 2018s, but she competed. But man, did she have a good career. Good horse. Good for the Bromans. Good to see, you know, the people who are big supporters of the New York Red program, especially, you know, have winners on that day as well. Obviously, I don't think you can think of anybody that's been done more for the New York Red program than the Bromans. They feel like they've been involved for a very, very long time.
Absolutely. Well, and that's what the Breeders' Cup win last year was very special. I mean, because they were there, and it was.
They're always there. That's another thing I love about them. They're there all the time, you know? It's nice. You know, it's not always possible for owners to be there. It's understood, but the Bromans are really there a lot, you know? All during the year. They're great lovers of the game, great supporters of the game.
Very much.
Hard not to root for people like that, right?
Yeah, I've got one other... chart that I retain, that I'll bring it up with Tony Black on Thursday. How about Richie Vega? He's got these New York breds, Andy, and he keeps coming up from Philly with his New York breds and winning races. That Bluegrass Express won again and didn't get bet again.
Well, I thought he was probably an underlay, but in an unusual race. I mean, I know I don't want to knock him, but won a couple races under pretty good circumstances. He was in a race that featured a very wicked pace that collapsed, and the horse who was probably best broke 7 lengths behind the field. I mean, with all due respect, sort of an unusual race.
I hear you.
And he ended up the speed in Saratoga last time in a race where he was about the fifth fastest horse early. I understand, you know.
Yeah.
I understand, but I'm not sure you say he didn't get bad. I don't know what price he thought he should have been in that race. Didn't seem like he should have been that short a price to me. You know, what price is more he won?
I think he was, was he 6-1, 8-1?
I don't know. What did he pay?
He paid 20.
What day was that?
That was, must have been Thursday.
Thursday or Friday?
Thursday, I think.
Well, let's take a look.
And I was not involved, quote unquote, but I was interested in the race because Gary had Cecilia Mike, and who I like as a hard trier, and
It was 15 to 1 morning line.
Was he really?
So actually, okay. He did get bet.
Now, somebody he did get scratched. Bet a little.
Well, somebody was scratched, though. Stoney Bennett scratched was 5 to 2, so he's actually closer to 12 to 1 morning, you know, but still. And no reason for him to have gotten bet in there. He got some pretty good circumstance to win it. It's horse racing. Most of the time, you get unlucky, so it's okay to get lucky sometimes.
It's been very productive from since the summer, since Saratoga, with these out-of-town trainers that have New York breds, and they've come to town and have done well. It's
okay, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, I mean, look, you're going to see out-of-town people win with New York. I mean, that's what they're going to win with the vast majority of the time, because that's when they're going to come. In races that are winnable with New York breds. I mean, this is, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy a little bit, right?
A little bit.
I mean, that's rates to be the case. And, you know, so I don't know that we have an unusual number not this year. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It does feel like a little bit, but I don't know if that's the case or not.
I do, there's one other name that I don't know if we talked about him last week. We didn't talk last week because you had dentist.
I did.
Right?
You know, it was nice.
Which
dentist chair right now?
Which do you dread more, me or the dentist?
I like the dentist. The dentist, we talk about gambling. He's a seasoned Nick Sickenholder, so he's a masochist.
Michael Dilger and Hello Don Julio.
Okay,
I just love. I think Dilger does a nice job with the opportunities he has, and
I agree.
This is a horse that doesn't run a lot, but it when he's right
frequently,
but he's old already. Is he 5 or 6? He's older.
He's 4, but maybe
no.
I'll look right now.
He's older, and he's only made like 18 starts.
I think he's feeling like he's run a bunch this year.
I know. It feels like he's been around. For me,
it feels like he's been around
forever.
A bunch this year, I said.
Yes. Yes, yes.
That's very strange.
Right?
No. There he is. Okay. You're right. He's 6. Yeah, I would have thought he was younger. You're right. I would have thought he was much younger. Well, he didn't start running until he was 4. That's the problem. That's the reason. But, I mean, this was his 5th start. I mean, he's made 11 starts in 2 years. I mean, these horses don't usually run that much. The horse didn't start until he was 4 years old. I mean, it's hard, right?
He ran
a terrific career. I mean, he's got 6 wins in 4 seconds in the third and 18 starts.
Yep.
He's okay, this horse.
He's a good horse.
His debut at Gulfstream. Right. Is that the winter? He won the winter I was there, but I had left. That was March. He won. And then he ran him back 3 weeks later in the Pan Am. That's right. Crazy.
He's a good horse.
Yeah. No. I agree. Couldn't agree more. And he's got tactical speed. He is a good horse. Anything else?
That is.
He won the first running at the point of entry.
And. Got a big fig, and I think has got more to
yeah,
come.
Yeah, probably playing for the Red Smith, right?
That makes sense. That turf course at Aqueduct. People are counting the minutes to get over there, and are hoping that
it's cold this week. Sunday was the coldest I've been at Belmont since the day we canceled closing weekend. It was 2011. It's funny. I was talking to Dave Brennan yesterday, and we were trying to remember what year, and he looked it up. When El Padrino broke his maiden the second race that Saturday on second to last day, and it was, I remember Jason and I were standing up on the studio, you know, and it was watching the race, and it gets scratched out of like 3 years later. It was an off-the-turf race. I feel like a small field. And it was snowing on the turf course. And we both looked at each other. And it was bitter cold. It was really cold up there. And saying, like, how can we, we got to be canceling. We can't continue. It was really, wind was blowing. It was snowing. It was crazy. And we ended up, I think a nor'easter blew in. We canceled that. And, closing day, we canceled closing day last year as well. Which I don't know if people remember.
Yep.
Turned out to work out well because we canceled it, like the Chelsea Flower, and they ran it back at Belmont, at Aqueduct. We're going to lose it instead. But, yeah. And it was because it was really windy on Sunday. When Stabile is cold with me, I know it's cold. It was chilly up there. But it was really the wind. You know, it's funny. I look more at the wind now because I do those daily track trends. So I look at what the wind is during the day. And if you look at that day's wind, it was like 15 miles an hour, which is a lot, you know, to be straight through 15 miles an hour. And it just was swirling. And basically, the wind went sort of counterclockwise, I think, from the start of the day to the end of the day, but never let up. It just changed direction.
The wind... the wind notes, I know that Jerry Brown big on wind direction.
Esoterica.
A little bit.
Well,
did you, by the way,
racing world goes round on esoterica. I don't say that.
Exactly.
All right. We done?
We are, and I
Who's
look
your next
forward.
Victim?
Well, we've got Gordon Elliott. From Ireland, and Charlie Hayward.
Oh, good. All right. Well, have fun.
I appreciate it. Andy,
nice
I
would,
of course I'll be nice to Charlie.
Kidding.
Thanks. Right. Racing resumes tomorrow at Belmont Park, of course, and got another week after this, and then the scene shifts to Ozone Park and Aqueduct and that double turf course, and I guarantee you, if the weather can give it any leeway, they'll get a lot of grass as much as they can, because we've lost a ton of races. Just crazy. Let's take a break. 90 minutes in, 90 to come, and Gordon Elliott is going to join us from Ireland and talk about winning the American Grand National, adding to his litany of successes over hurdles. Charlie Hayward as well. And Charlie will talk about his long relationship with Rick Violet. And Charlie and Rick, they're the ones that had to shoulder all the difficulty when it came to the franchise debate and struggle and other difficulties with Albany. And Charlie is, as I mentioned and Andy referenced, wrote an absolutely wonderful piece as well that I'll send out a link to. Back after this, second half at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're just, I'm leaving it in Casey's hands. We may actually have Charlie Hayward join us first before Gordon Elliott. Whenever you're reaching out across the ocean, always a little tricky. And we'll see. I think Tony will be a lot more excited about talking about Bluegrass Express and Richie Vega's win from the other day. Paid 2020, and Gary was second with Cecilia Mike, who really just always runs hard. That Cecilia Mike, and is always, you know, he's always like third choice for whatever reason. He was 5-1, and this paid well. This was a nice nice mutual. So that's, I guess I can clean off a few of these. You know, that mention that I of Javier, you know, I referenced T.D. Thornton earlier. About the, he gave some of the backstory on the collapsible temporary rail, the safety rails, and in addition to that, he actually talked about Castellano and his first win. If you didn't see this at TDN, it was really fun. He pulled up Javier's first victory of now 5,000 plus, and there's a curiosity to it. It came at Calder, and not only was Castellano in there getting his first win, but Randy Romero riding in that race and Ramon Dominguez. So coming out of Castellano's first career win, a race with three Hall of Famers. It was pretty cool. And actually, TD also in that piece talked about Ramon. You know, Ramon is running, you know, not Olympic competitive, but he's out doing some road race work and doing very well at it, naturally, because tremendous athlete. There's also one other, and this is a story, since I've got the piece in my hand, as we wait to see whether we're going with Charlie or Gordon Elliott. Did everybody find or see the story out of Jessamine County? Just horrific, going back now maybe 3 weeks. Someone shot a weanling colt out in a in a paddock field. And the county sheriff's office continues to ask for help if anybody has information. 859-885-4139. It is just unspeakable. And they say that they found other shells, too. So whoever, whatever sick, pathetic individual that did this, it took other shots at other horses out in the field. This was at Springhouse Farm in Jessamine County. I mean, just incredible. I saw it when it happened and didn't get a chance, but TD followed it up. So we'll go back to the conversation that continues and will into tomorrow, because Joe Applebaum and Pat Kelly tomorrow and Jerry Bailey. But our second appreciation today of Rick Violette comes from Charlie Hayward. And when I was driving back Sunday from Philadelphia and putting names together of who I thought, you know, would be appropriate, Charlie right away was near the top, because as I referenced regarding Rick, and I have regarding Charlie over the years, both presided over and saw New York racing through the most difficult period in its history. And indeed, if you saw Charlie's piece at thoroughbredracing.com, you know how highly he prized Rick's friendship and respected his acumen and his dedication to the horse and to the horsemen and to all stakeholders involved in the game. Always a pleasure to welcome Charlie Hayward.
Steve, how are you?
Good, good, Charlie. This is one of those, and Andy was on just before you, Serling, and you know, really appropriately, Alan Foreman as well. One of these losses that you kind of wince, and just the unfairness of this one seems acute, and you know, the outpouring really tells the story about how Rick helped all kinds of people, and even people that don't know that they were helped by him.
Well, that's a really important, and I think, you know, really, really good point. You know, Rick was a really good friend. You know, I'd last seen him actually at Saratoga, and had been in touch with him, even though I've been away from NYRA since 2011. I'm away from NYRA, the organization, but I'm at the racetrack pretty frequently. So I'd had a chance to stay in touch with him. He had sort of ups and downs, but I saw him at Saratoga, a little reception for him in Peggy Steinman's house, actually. But it was a nicer reception, and he looked great. I got to say, he'd filled out, and I thought, man, this guy really beat it, because he'd been hard at it for, gosh, almost 3 years. And I talked to him a couple times this fall, but I'd never seen him. And I got a call Sunday from both Andy Serling and Stephen Travers, who's a good friend who works at NYRA, and said they both felt that Rick was in a bad way. And it just really shocked me. And it's, the whole thing is really sad. But you know, you made an interesting point. One of the things that I think I learned from Rick, and believe me, Rick was a very principled guy, and he had a very strong sense of right and wrong. And, you know, when you're running the racetrack and you got the horsemen's, head of the horsemen's group, you guys aren't going to always agree on things. But I learned really early on, I came to NYRA in November 2004. Rick, I think, was elected president of NYRA sometime in 2005. And what I really learned from Rick, and I was really pleased to have done it in my early days of NYRA, is that the racing community all of the components of the racing, the racetrack operators, the racetrack staff, the jockeys, trainers, breeders, media people, backstretch workers, the betting fans, obviously, stewards. I mean, it's a community that's incredibly reliant on one another. And if any of the individual parties, be they backstretch workers, the gate crew, an owner, I mean, if they get out of sync, the whole thing doesn't work. And it's really bad for everybody. And so whenever we had issues to deal with Rick, he always came from them, not from necessarily a self-interested horseman's perspective, but, you know, what's really the best for the game? And, you know, that made it really easy to deal with him. I mean, he stood above the fray. He had really strong opinions, but he was a pretty special guy.
There was tremendous pressures, Charlie, that you both were facing internally and externally, and there were obviously going to be topics and moments where you were pulling together, but then at the same time had some conflicting interests when it came to the association and the horsemen. How did that even get managed? Because it had to be difficult. But I imagine that the common foe, basically, being Albany, made it easy, at least easy to you know, to know that you had to work together.
Right. Well, let's just go through a few examples. I mean, I could spend the next half an hour talking about all the good things that Rick did, but I think you make a good point, and I'll just take us through quickly a couple of critical areas where if we didn't work together, the whole thing might have blown up. And I don't mean that, you know, to pump myself up, but just as an example, I started at NIRA in November 2004, and probably the most important person I interviewed with wasn't Steve Dunker or Peter Karchus, who were the two, you know, vice chairs at that point, and they were sort of running the place. But it was a guy named Neil Getnick, who was the federal monitor, because the prior year, 25 mutual clerks at NIRA were indicted for tax evasion, all kinds of nefarious activities associated with betting activities. And so any meeting I was in, we had to be with him. In addition, right after that, so Rick was always with me when we were talking about any issue. Then we had the franchise deal looming on the horizon. But before that, you may recall the VLT law was passed in 2001. All the harness tracks had their VLTs, the seven of them had the VLT operations up and running in 2005. And the Pataki administration was slow rolling us, wouldn't even approve the deal that we had with MGM, who was originally going to be doing what Genting is now doing at Aqueducts. And that forced us into a situation where they were required to fund us if they didn't approve it, but they wouldn't give us the funding. So NIRA went into bankruptcy. There was a $25 million unpaid purse account that, or a purse liability, let's not call it an unpaid account, that the state easily could have forced us to, you know, write all that off, because once you're in bankruptcy, you can write off any debts that you have and start over. And, you know, we certainly didn't want to do it, and the horsemen certainly didn't want to do it, but the state, with the franchise hanging over our head, was very keen to do that. So working with these guys, and particularly with Rick and his board, was really important. And there are other issues associated with the bankruptcy, but that purse, $25 million, would have put a real hurting on NIRA, and it certainly would have put a hurt on the horsemen. Anyway, so we finally did get out of bankruptcy. We finally did get, you know, Genting selected. you know, we didn't get the VLCs up and operating until it was October 31st, 2011. And in the run-up to that, we had to figure out what the deal was. And by the deal, you know, how much was going to go to purses, how much was going to go to the breeders, how much was going to go to NYRA, and how much would go to the state. And I think it was really important early on that that NYRA and NYTA would act, you know, in concert, because we knew the state was going to try and take as much money from racing as they could. And we settled on first-year splits for purses of 6% going up to 7.5%. The breeders to get 1.5%. And NYRA was going to get 4 for operating expenses and 3 for CapEx. And, you know, we held firm on that. And you know, there were people on our side of the table that thought we should fiddle with the numbers, and there were people on Rick's side of the table that thought we should do that, because you're talking about, you know, big amounts of money. And, you know, I always knew when Rick said, listen, I got a tough board, but, you know, I'm authorized to do this, so let's go. And so, it again, his word was the gospel, and he was just great to work in that environment. And I'm not sure, you know, that the franchise would have survived if we didn't have that collaborative relationship. And then he's gone on after I left. You know, current administration and NYRA seem to be moving towards doing fewer winter racing dates, and which would be a huge disaster. Still looks like they probably want to get out of Aqueduct, but that's none of my business. But anyway, Rick and Jeff Canizzo of the Breeders got together and worked Albany and convinced the legislatures over NYRA's objections to guarantee X number of winter dates, and that when the winter dates were set forward, they always had to be approved by the breeders and by NYTA. So Rick was, you know, he was great giving out scholarships, and he was great, you know, working on regulatory issues, but he also was fantastic on the big picture issues. And, you know, my view always was, if you have a problem with Rick Violette, you're probably on the wrong side of the issue.
I like that. It was tough. So many conversations that he and I had that, you know, that also included a completely unnecessary legal battle regarding the NYTA election that was completely ridiculous. Nothing that Rick did. But so often...
You mean with one guy running an office that could get 264 votes right off the bat? That election?
That would be it. And the... you know, the way in which he would confront controversy or divisive issues was just so refreshing, and you couldn't. I always had to be careful, Charlie, scheduling Rick. Because there couldn't be a hard stop time. I couldn't have a guest at the top of the hour, let's say, because if you couldn't pigeonhole Rick to 15 minutes. There was invariably going to be a few roundabout, tangential portions of any conversation. He would,
I know,
give
you've been talking to Rick on LASIK for less than 10 minutes. That's for sure.
Well, one thing that also, you know, it's funny, every conversation we're having about him, another topic gets mentioned where you realize how steadfast he was, and his approach, as you just referenced, was able to result in you know, what is the right thing, at least for, you know, most of us that that appreciate a cost-effective and you know, easily easily utilizable way to inhibit bleeding. And Rick was tremendous on that. And you think back to that terrific one-day seminar that we had at Belmont that was so informative and brought together an international panel of experts from all areas, and those discussions, which was really good. I mean, everything, whenever you needed an assessment, an honest assessment, Rick could be counted on.
Yep. And, you know, there was a human side to him, too, which we all saw. And if he got in a hard spot and he needed your help, he certainly made no bones about asking me for stuff. For example, and this didn't happen, you know, more than once or twice, but we were at Saratoga one day, and he had an owner with a first-time starter who was a pretty big owner for him. And I don't know if the stewards were watching a baseball game or what they were doing, but the horse came out on the track, and it was 5.5 for a long race, and the horse got loose. Still had the jock on, but the jock couldn't control the horse. I swear, almost went blowing by, you know, coming over from the clubhouse tournament, blowing by the gate. I thought he was going to run right into it because I'm watching the whole thing. The horse goes all the way down and runs through the far turn. They finally catch the horse. They bring the horse back, and the horse was like 8-5. And, you know, there's no way they should have run that horse. And they come back, they load it up, put the horse in. He runs for 3 furlongs and ease and doesn't finish. So he comes in to me that afternoon and said, you know, my owner's going crazy. You know, he thinks maybe I have a problem. You know, I can't get the attention of the stewards because I'm too close to Naira. And you know, could you help me out? Just give the guy a call. And I said, I can certainly tell him that you aren't too close to Naira, even though we have a good relationship. So, but I did. I called the guy, and I said, look, if you want, I'd be happy to get one of the stewards in here because I think they completely blew it. And you're right to be pissed off, but Rick's got nothing to do with it. Rick, once that horse hits the track, it's in the hands of the steward. And even if Rick could have said something to him, they wouldn't have paid any attention to him. So you know, it's just that kind of give and take on. And as you know, at the racetrack, anything can happen on any day, and you got to kind of be prepared for it. And you know, we could go at it pretty good about something that we didn't agree on, but we also knew that each other were, you know, trying to act in the best interest of the sport, and that went a long ways.
The backstretch, I'm going to talk to Pat Kelly tomorrow and to Joe and Applebaum and Humberto Chavez, what has been done to help backstretch workers and their families. I also would like to get longtime paddock guard Leroy in too, because Rick would love it if I can get Leroy on. I don't know if you, Charlie, this was a couple of summers ago, a preposterous incident that Rick had to step in on behalf of Leroy and. He just was at the ready, as Andy said earlier, to do the right thing. One of those individuals that every racetrack community needs to come along to help everybody, because it's a tough enough life as it is, and a tough enough business.
Rick was a great human being, good New England boy. I was curious to see that he actually went up at a very young age and worked at Woodbine for a little while. Still had a little bit of that Boston twang, but he really understood people, worked with people really well. But I get back to the fundamental point, which I really learned from him, which is that it's a community. We're all reliant on one another. We may have different interests individually on a particular point of view, but if we can't get over our differences and if we can't do things, you know, I don't care if, you know, are we going to scratch? I remember up at Saratoga, the one time in the whole time that I was there that we had to cancel because of heat.
Yeah.
You know, we brought everybody in, and, you know, Rick was there with a couple of trainers. We had the vets, and you know, just, okay, what's the baseline here? Well, the baseline is if it gets over, a heat index gets over 105, you know, we don't run, says the vet. And Rick said, I said to Rick, is that fine by you? I mean, that sounds like a good metric to me. And so then I turned to the stewards and the weather guys and say, well, what do you think the heat index is going to be? And at that level, what do you think the possibility or probability is of a horse collapsing after the race is over? He said, well, the heat index is probably going to be 106, 107, and it's probably a good 50% chance at least one horse is going to go down. Rick looks at me and he says, that's it, we're not racing today. And, you know, it's complicated thing, because people are staying in Saratoga, you know, $400 a night for their hotel to watch their horse run, but fortunately it was like 6:30 in the morning, so we didn't have those issues. But you know, he always had your back if your back was back on the right issue. And I have I could regale you with Rick Violet stories for the rest of the day, and I'm sure you'll get plenty of them from your other guests.
Well, Charlie, I really appreciate it, and having had discussions with you all through that unbelievably difficult period of time.
Oh man, I recall many times you were right in the thick of things, and you didn't know where the bullets were coming from, especially if I'm sitting across from.
Well, I kind of relied at that time on the conversation I had with John Nehrud. And when I asked John at the even before the process was starting, and I said, John, what's going to happen here? And John said, Naira's getting the franchise. He said, people can dance and sing and and all kinds of bids, and they can do whatever they want. He said, but Naira owns the racetracks. And John, how do you know? Because I was in the room in 1955 when they signed the deeds.
Right.
And when John said that, I said, well, then I'm backing this horse. And that was the, you know, that. And of course, Charlie, in retrospect, they still found a way to engineer themselves into it, and it's just amazing. What you and Rick did, having to deal through all of that, nobody can thank you guys enough for. Looking out for not just New York racing, but the entire industry, because as New York goes, so goes American racing. So,
that's very kind of you to say that, Steve. And it's really, you know, one of my deepest regrets from the time that I was there, and also, frankly, which resulted in my termination. Inappropriately, but that's for another day. Is imagine if we had the support of state government, if the OTBs and the state government were working with such a powerful organization as NYRA, with its owners and its purses and so forth. Boy, it could have been a lot better for everybody.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have these, you know, issues like workman's comp, you know, which seem, you know, just crazy and prohibit people from coming from out of state to race in the state. But so be it. That's the way that it was. And it's still a pretty good darn game here in New York, and hopefully that will continue.
Absolutely. And Charlie, always, even under these circumstances, always a pleasure to have you add your voice to at the races. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, as I said, I closed out an article I wrote about Rick. It says, in his honor, let's try and do for the others some of the things that we've enjoyed with a remarkable Rick Fowler. So he was good here.
Absolutely. I'll send out the link at thoroughbredracing.com. Everybody should be visiting on a regular basis. So much good work and international perspective in addition to the domestic industry. And Charlie Hayward, just always.
Steve, thanks a lot. It was a great pleasure to talk with you as always and to talk a little bit about our great good friend, Rick Fowler.
Charlie Hayward, everybody. Thank you. Charlie. A lot of unfair things happen in and around racing, well, all the time. It's a lot of vagaries, including what was foisted on Charlie. Let's and Rick. We'll take a break here. I'm still trying to connect with Gordon Elliott. I think, in fact, Casey's been on the phone to Ireland so much that he now has a brogue. Oh, we're going to start calling him Casey. Oh, that was terrible. John White yet. Hopefully Gordon Elliott. Mike Welsh as well. Back after this.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.